Our bottom line is that ASEAN is essential. I want to say that it's essential to the regional architecture of the Indo-Pacific.
U.S. to expand strategic partnership with ASEAN. It's Thursday, October 28th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Amy Heibels in Washington. You can also find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, UN reports as extreme weather, climate change wreaking havoc in Asia. Gates Foundation pledges millions to get COVID pill to developing countries. LinkedIn reinventing itself in China. Climate tests on the human body. And it's pumpkin time in the U.S. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Joe Biden has announced plans to provide up to $102 million to expand the U.S. strategic partnership with the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, ASEAN. The announcement came during a virtual summit with the 10-nation bloc. VOA's White House correspondent Patsy Wadakaswara has the story.
Brunei's head of state, Sultan Hassan al-Bolkiah, hosted Tuesday's virtual summit of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, or ASEAN.
This year, we have made significant progress in strengthening our cooperation with external partners.
One of those external partners is the U.S. During the summit, President Joe Biden announced plans to provide up to $102 million to expand its strategic partnership with the bloc, including $40 million to help address the current COVID-19 pandemic and strengthen ASEAN's ability to prevent, detect, and respond to future pandemics.
Our bottom line is that ASEAN is essential. I want to state that it's essential to the regional architecture of the Indo-Pacific. And the United States is committed to ASEAN's centrality. You know, it's a linchpin. It's a linchpin for maintaining the resilience, the prosperity, and security of our shared region.
President Donald Trump participated at the ASEAN summit in 2017, but skipped the following years. The economically dynamic regional bloc of 10 Southeast Asian nations is seen as key to countering a rising China. The trade group, U.S.-ASEAN Business Council, welcomes America's re-engagement. Mark Mealy is Senior Vice President for Policy at the U.S.-ASEAN Business Council.
We're talking about a region that by 2030 is going to be one of the largest regional economies in the world. We're talking about a part of the world where over 21 different states in the United States have annual exports of over $1 billion U.S. dollars in goods to the 10 countries in Southeast Asia.
While the U.S. is seen as a security guarantor against Chinese military ambitions, Washington is lagging behind Beijing in economic ties. ASEAN is China's largest trading partner. Both are part of the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, or RCEP. Signed in 2020, it's the world's biggest free trade agreement, but excludes the U.S. The U.S. is also left out of the Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement for Trans-Pacific Partnership, CPTPP, a free trade agreement formerly known as the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The 2016 TPP was promoted by President Barack Obama.
We just officially terminated TPP.
But abandoned by President Donald Trump in 2017. Prashant Parameswaran is a fellow with the Wilson Center's Asia program.
On several issues, whether it's trade or climate, the United States plays an important role in setting the table and then sometimes leaves the table. And these countries like Japan and ASEAN are able to continue on the legacy thereafter. But I do think the United States ends up losing.
While U.S.-China rivalry has intensified, ASEAN members underscore the need to cooperate with both nations, but at the same time ensure freedom of navigation, including managing tensions in the Taiwan Strait. Indonesian Coordinating Minister for Maritime Affairs and Investment, Luhut Panjaitan.
What's the benefit for the conflict happening in that area? What's the benefit? Who get the benefit? Nobody. COVID is enough created the problem.
Myanmar did not attend this year's ASEAN summit since the group banned its junta leaders for ignoring a peace roadmap agreed to 6 months ago following the country's military coup. Patsy Wadakaswara, VOA News at the White House.
We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. U.S. to develop Indo-Pacific economic framework. Timeline for potential attacks by Islamic State Al-Qaeda getting shorter. High turnout, weak challengers mark Uzbek election. U.S. East Asia leaders convene to discuss threats, challenges in region. China says Taiwan has no right to join United Nations. Additional coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. A UN report says extreme weather and the impact of climate change killed thousands of people and resulted in enormous economic losses in all parts of Asia last year. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
A multi-agency report coordinated by the World Meteorological Organization warns the lives and livelihoods of millions of people across Asia are being threatened by floods, tropical cyclones, drought, and other weather and climate hazards. The report says extreme weather and climate events are affecting agriculture, food, and water security, worsening health risks, and causing the mass displacement of vulnerable migrants and refugees. It says the cost in damaged infrastructure and lost ecosystems runs into hundreds of billions of dollars a year. Among the many weather anomalies hitting Asia is temperature rise. WMO spokeswoman Clara Nullis notes Asia had its warmest year on record in 2020.
The most extreme temperature that we saw last year was in a Siberian town, Verkhoyansk. We saw an amazingly incredible temperature of 38 degrees Celsius. We're still investigating whether this is a new record for north of the Arctic Circle.
The report finds sea surface temperatures and ocean warming in and around Asia are increasing more than the global average. It says temperatures in parts of the Arctic Ocean have been warming at three times the global average during the 1982-2020 period. A major problem affecting the region is that of melting glaciers, which will have a huge impact on food and water security. High Mountain Asia is home to approximately 100,000 kilometers of glaciers centered on the Tibetan Plateau and the Himalayas. Nullis says the region has the largest volumes of ice outside of the polar regions. She notes it is the source of 10 important rivers in Asia upon which millions of people depend.
Glacier retreat is accelerating. It's projected that glacier mass will decrease by 20 to 40% by 2050. This will affect about 750 million people in the region. Major ramifications, obviously, for global sea level rise, regional water cycles, and in the short term, more hazards such as landslides, avalanches, etc.
The report finds floods and storms in 2020 affected about 50 million people in Asia, killed more than 5,000, and has resulted in more than $400 billion in accumulated losses just in China, India, and Japan. Meteorologists say the costs of extreme events in Asia are rising and warn the trends are expected to continue in the future. They urge nations to adapt to the climate-changing events and to invest in renewable energy and other protective technologies. They say the high-stakes investments will result in multiple socioeconomic benefits. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In other news, Australia's opposition party said on Wednesday a looming election will be fought on greenhouse gas reduction targets as Prime Minister Scott Morrison comes under criticism from scientists over the modest goals he will take to a UN climate summit. Morrison has been left no room to maneuver on Australia's 2030 reduction target under a deal struck this week with his Conservative government's rural-based junior coalition partner, the Nationals Party. The Nationals have agreed to support the ruling Liberal Party's target of net zero emissions by 2050 in return for Australia sticking to its six-year-old target of reducing emissions by only 26% to 28%
below 2005 levels by the end of the decade. Still ahead on VOA Asia, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is putting up millions of dollars to push production of a new COVID pill for developing countries. Happening now in Asia, in Myanmar, two explosions Wednesday rocked an area near the Road Transportation Administration Department in Mandalay, injuring at least 9 people. A group calling itself the Special Attacking Force claimed responsibility for the bombing on its Facebook page, saying they wanted to deprive the military-installed government of money for buying ammunition. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're so glad you decided to join us on VOA Asia. While a new and promising COVID-19 treatment is being evaluated for emergency use in the U.S., there's an injection of financial backing to get this breakthrough drug to the rest of the world. VOA's Carolyn Prasuti explains.
These pills carry hope for those who catch COVID. The drug manufacturer Merck says molnupiravir prevents the coronavirus from multiplying. Taken early, clinical trials show the pill reduces the risk of hospitalization or death by half, and it's easy to use.
They could go to their pharmacy and take their medication the way they do other medicines.
If the Food and Drug Administration approves Merck's request for emergency use, the pills could be available in the U.S. before the end of the year. The company plans similar emergency use applications worldwide. But financing and distributing this drug and other treatments, including vaccines, to underdeveloped parts of the world remains a challenge.
We need to get serious about that this is a worldwide problem that needs worldwide solutions. So I think even if you say no one is safe, if everyone is not safe, I mean, it's so true.
The U.S. has pre-purchased 1.7 million courses of the drug. To help get the drug to the rest of the world faster, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is putting up $120 million to push makers of generic drugs to produce Merck's drug for developing countries. Money is at the heart of any COVID treatment. Dr. Caleb Hernandez is an emergency room doctor who also researches COVID drug discoveries. He says 3 other drug treatments have been studied, including one that rivals Merck's claims for molnupiravir. He says they lack the financial backing to seek FDA approval.
Our government isn't set up to spend the $500,000 to do these studies. We rely on private companies to bring things to the FDA. And that's why you're not going to see as much innovation as you could see.
And there is concern about relying on the Merck pill instead of getting a vaccine, which experts prefer since it teaches the body to make its own antibodies.
It can prevent you from getting COVID in the first place. And we want to prevent infections, not just wait to treat them once they happen.
Dr. Hernandez sings a tribute to a colleague who quit the profession, burned out from COVID.
We've been going for almost 2 years now, fighting every day and watching people die. And I think it's difficult when people in the community don't believe you. They think that you're part of some conspiracy or you're exaggerating or making things up. And then you go to work and you have to pronounce multiple people dead.
Nearly 5 million deaths worldwide and closing in on 740,000 American deaths from COVID. Carolyn Prasuti, VOA News.
Be sure to read and see more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook. In other COVID news, a U.S. Food and Drug Administration panel is recommending Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine for children 5 to 11 years of age. The FDA is expected to make its own decision within days. If regulators agree, shots could begin as early as next week. Young kids would get just a third of the dose given to teens and adults, according to the drug maker. A study found kid-sized vaccinations are nearly 91% effective at preventing symptomatic infection.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. Bangkok's hotels, street food carts, and tuk-tuks are preparing to welcome tourists as Thailand is set to reopen on November 1st to fully vaccinated visitors after 18 months of COVID-19 travel bans. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. LinkedIn China managed to outlast other U.S. tech giants, but it's now departing, citing the communist government's increased oversight of its content. China's latest effort, the data security law, lays out a framework for companies to classify data based on its economic value and relevance to China's national security. VOA Asia explores what gave LinkedIn more staying power and how it's reinventing itself in China. American-born entrepreneur Danny Levinson estimates half of his LinkedIn connections come from inside China. He has been using the social media platform for 4 years and is involved in several China-based businesses that use LinkedIn as one of their primary communication channels. The Beijing-based head of technology at the seed investment firm Matoka Capital says on the business side, it's been a critical way to expand visibility. But the China tech scene veteran was not surprised when LinkedIn's parent company, Microsoft, announced it would pull the professional networking service out of China, citing the communist government's increased oversight of its content. Levinson, like the Chinese nationals who work around him, said LinkedIn was never his primary means of everyday communication. WeChat is the dominant chat platform in China. The decision makes LinkedIn the latest foreign internet giant and the last major American social media platform to lose parts of the giant market, following blocks on the content of Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. Mark Natkin is the managing director with Beijing-based market research firm Marbridge Consulting.
There have been a number of occasions previously where I have thought that it was interesting that LinkedIn has made it this long in China. And ultimately, whenever I've thought that, I've reminded myself that's because it's about posting resumes and posting recruitment notices largely. And those things are not particularly problematic in China in terms of content. And it sounds from LinkedIn's statement that where things have become problematic is exactly with the type of content that is beyond that basic kind of core function.
Natkin is referring to LinkedIn's social feed and content such as redistributed news articles. Microsoft said it would close LinkedIn in China later this year. The professional networking site said in a recent blog post, it's faced a significantly more challenging operating environment and greater compliance requirements. LinkedIn says it will focus on helping professionals find jobs in China and help Chinese companies with recruitment by starting a service called InJobs. China has monitored the internet for 2 decades, from blocking websites to filtering social feeds, with the goal of intercepting anti-government material. Natkin says every multinational internet company doing business in China ultimately runs the significant risk of hitting a censorship barrier. Zenon Capron is the founder and director of Capron Asia, a Shanghai-based financial industry research firm. He says it's difficult to know who's left in China to leave.
When you look at, obviously, Google, Facebook, then Google's properties like YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter, all of these platforms have been either blocked or have a lessened presence in China.
Ma Rui, founder of the U.S.-based consulting firm TechBuzz China, says China's homegrown MyMy.cn, with a $1 billion valuation, vies heavily with LinkedIn in the job search space.
Given all the heat it's attracting for trying to adhere to Chinese rules, it was just like unnecessary given that it's not even a successful product.
She says it's unclear whether InJobs will absorb existing China-based LinkedIn profiles. Our thanks to Ralph Jennings in Taipei for contributing this story. I'm Amy Heibels in Washington. Making headlines in Asia, Beijing marked 100 days until the Winter Olympics Wednesday, but preparations for the Games have been overshadowed by boycott calls and a fresh coronavirus outbreak in China. The Chinese capital will be the first city to host both Summer and Winter Games. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, researchers at a specialized lab in Italy say understanding climate change effects requires recreating them in a controlled environment, So they built one. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has the story.
It wasn't long ago that rescue workers trained by climbing for hours, even days, to reach mountaintops to practice in extreme weather conditions. Today, they can do so in a lab. Head of Terex Cube at URAC Research Center in Italy, Christian Sturr, tells AP the facility simulates a wide range of environments.
Terex Cube è un centro per la simulazione e riproduzione.
In these rooms, we can reproduce environments from negative 40 degrees Celsius up to 60 degrees. In terms of altitude, we can go up to 9,000 meters. We combine wind, snow, and rain, and we have an entire research department that studies these effects on people.
This is the Terex Cube Extreme Climate Simulation Center, a part of URAC Research. Here, scientists study the impact of altitude and extreme weather on participants' blood thickness and its ability to carry oxygen. Last year, the facility served as an incubator for mountain climbers Simone Morrow and Tamara Lunger.
They were acclimated in our room for about a month. They were slowly brought up to 7,000 meters altitude. They trained inside. We monitored them with researchers and doctors. The goal is always to understand how man behaves scientifically in a process of acclimatization.
The researchers also look at what happens to heavy machinery exposed to the same extreme climates. Sturr explains.
We did some defrosting tests on big machines. These are cabins where people have to be inside. The test was to understand how fast the glass can defrost.
He says that test measures the quality of the glass, which is essential for machinery operating in extreme temperatures. Terex Cube received national accreditation to carry out climate tests not only on objects, but also on living beings. The URAC Research Center has more than 400 scientists, and officials say collaborating to understand the effects of climate change may be its most important work. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
In the U.S., nothing says Halloween like a visit to a pumpkin patch, where selections range from cute to specimens so gigantic they arrive by truck. T.T. Tran has this report for VOA from Orange County, California.
If it is October in the U.S., there's probably a pumpkin patch not too far away. In Orange County, there's one at the Ovi Regional Park. Pumpkins are a big deal on Halloween, a holiday always celebrated on October 31st. Like so many American customs, its origin can be traced to an immigrant community. In this case, the Irish. In ancient times, they carved scary faces into gourds to ward off evil spirits. In their new home, they use native pumpkins instead.
Did you know at school we were learning about pumpkins?
Orange County defined the American melting pot. Almost 70% of its 3.18 million residents were born out of the U.S. Every day, you hear many languages. English, Spanish, Mandarin, Pashto, Hindi, Korean, and Vietnamese. Because this is home to one of the largest Vietnamese-American communities.
We came here last year, but there were fewer people than there are this year.
Many children help their adults select pumpkins to carve at home. There are games, hay rides, tasty treats, and a chance to try panning for gold. That's what first drew people to California, the gold rush.
Pumpkin pie all over, like the train, food, pretty much everything.
Every year, Southern California pumpkin growers bring their biggest pumpkins here to see which one weighs most. On September 25th, the winner tipped the scale at 695 kilos for a $3,250 prize. But what a lightweight compared to winners at the World Championship Pumpkin Weigh-Up 2 weeks later, where a mega monster 994-kilo pumpkin won $19,719. For a Washington State grower in an event just south of San Francisco in Half Moon Bay. These days, back at the Irvine Regional Park, there's still time to pick a pumpkin for carving. Because once the sun set on October 31st, everybody needs those scary faces to keep the evil spirits away. Didi Jun for VOA News, Orange County, California.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Be sure to like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can also find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Keith Lane, Chris Cascao, Jessica Stone, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Amy Heibels in Washington. Now go and make it a great day.